This is The Platform Rules, digital transformation for product companies, hosted by Propel Software. Today, we're exploring the no-code revolution and the rise of user-friendly technology solutions in the enterprise world. We're joined by Kishore Subramanian, VP of Engineering at Propel, to discuss how these tools enable faster execution and free up IT to focus on innovation. Here's your host, Dario.
Sure. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dario.
All right. So we get a lot of questions about low-code, no-code technology solutions. So that's what we want to explore today. And we've got you on because I think you've got the perfect background to give us a primer on what it is and why companies are embracing it. So why don't we start with just a quick overview of your history so everybody has a little bit of context here about what we're talking about.
That sounds great. Yeah. So I am VP Engineering at Propel. And prior to this, I was at Google for almost 7 years and been in enterprise software companies and startups many years now. So in terms of what is relevant to today's topic, which is no-code, low-code tools, I would say in the late 2010s, I think it's around 2009-10 timeframe, I worked on a no-code solution. We didn't call it no-code back then. It was a tool. We had this really nifty tool from Yahoo back then called Yahoo Pipes. And we were building something similar for the enterprise customers. We called it Wires. But basically, this allowed a business user who's not a developer to be able to unlock data that's sitting in different siloed tables, like whether it's a database, some data is sitting in spreadsheets, other data is sitting in different applications like Salesforce and so on, to be able to bring that together and unlock that data, right? So we had worked on a really nifty application around that time frame, but it was a little too early for that tool in some ways. There weren't enough sources of data available. Fast forward a few years later, I was at Google, worked on a tool called Google Web Designer. Again, this was a tool that is meant, the end users of this tool were creative designers, right? People who are typically used to using tools from Adobe. So this is very similar to Adobe Flash, where you could build really engaging marketing content and display ads. I mean, this is Google. So this tool was used to build display ads using drag and drop. Clicks, not code, was the mantra. So yeah, this gave me a really good perspective into what no-code and low-code tools can do.
Yeah, so I noticed a lot of the examples you used of people who don't know how to code were marketers. That's not lost on me, but I appreciate that. So thank you on that front. Let's just again, I'm very familiar with low code because all jokes aside, a lot of marketing solutions are low code. But just for the sake of clarification for anybody who's not as familiar, just at its core, what does low code, no code mean?
Yeah, let's start there, right? So as the name suggests, no code tools are those tools that help someone create software without having to write code. So in other words, they're not expected to be software engineers. They can use clicks and drag and drop user experience, user interface to build new functionality, right? So the best way to describe this is using the example of Legos, right? So you have these Lego blocks. Each block has a certain type of functionality kind of pre-built into it. And then you can bring these together to create something completely new, completely custom, right? Something that even the builders of Lego wouldn't have envisioned, something like that. It's your creativity that is getting unlocked, but they're providing you the tool and the framework to do that. Now, that is no code. How about low code, right? Low code involves a certain amount of knowledge, a technical knowledge, but not necessarily coding level knowledge, right? As an example, and now, there's a tool called Salesforce Flow that's built into Salesforce. Now you can use this tool to integrate between different systems to create, to move data from one system to another, right? Just as an example. You may have to kind of iterate through a list of items, make some changes, and then ship it over to the other system. So you need a little bit of technical knowledge, but you're really not writing here. But you still need to know some conditional logic and how to iterate through something and so on, right? Now, as against a full code approach, we should, for the sake of completeness, also bring that up, where if you're extending functionality by writing code, then that's a full code approach. Obviously, this requires a software developers. You need testers to actually test that solution and so on, right? And what's been happening of late in the last few weeks and months, you have tools like AI tools like ChatGPT that are coming in and pushing the limits of what is possible. So in other words, a user can today tell ChatGPT to generate a certain type of image or a video based on some natural language input, and it's able to generate that, right? So that is taking it to another level. And I think this is the beginning of the next generation of these tools, I would say.
Okay. So, how does all of this work if this is just the beginning? And I don't mean from a technical back-end perspective, but from a user like myself, again, a non-technical person, what is going to be the difference here? You talk about this is just the beginning. So as you think, as well as today, as well as going in the future, what's the big difference between, say, a low-code, no-code solution and a more traditional type of platform?
Yeah, I think we can talk about this in the by taking some examples, right? So, and we'll talk in the context of enterprise, which is the topic today. So previously, you had to, so let's say you had to make some changes to the to your database, all the way where your data is stored. You had to hire some database administrators who knew a language called SQL through which they used to make changes. Over a period of time, that got abstracted, and now you use tools. You don't need to know that level of technical details, but you can use the tool to do it, right? It helped with that. Now, soon, there were tools added to at the process layer. So for instance, if you had to extend your tool to move data from one system to the other, which is very common in the enterprise, right? I mean, no application sits in a silo. It is going to interact with upstream and downstream systems. Now, we had to use Java code to write some custom code to do this, to move data in and out of systems. Now, same thing with UI, the end user experience. It was very rigid. It is whatever came with the application is what you got, right? There was no way to change things or change the UI to suit your specific needs. An example being, hey, you don't like the order of buttons that are there. You want to add a new tab with some extra information. You want to add a report to kind of enhance the the effectiveness of that particular screen, your UI. You couldn't do it. It is what came shrink-wrapped, and that's exactly what you could do. But but with these tools, it is unlocking the potential of your business users who know what they want. They kind of know, they are domain experts, they know what they want, but they did not quite have the tools with which they could make that happen. They had to rely on your IT developers, they had to rely on your IT basically to, they had to get in line, so if you will, in the IT backlog to get things done. And they couldn't move at that fast speed, right? So that is what is changing. And these tools, if I may, they have matured over time, right? Software as an has matured over time, just like in other industries. Whether it's automobile or even construction, there are prefabricated things, pre-built things, modules that kind of come together, and now a lot more things are possible in a much more quicker way. In the same way, software is also evolving and maturing. More abstractions are being built. So that's what is happening, yeah.
So when you talk about it's being built in a faster way and empowering the experts, is that really the benefit that companies are seeing? Is this giving some of that decision-making process to the experts who can then move quicker? Is that, I mean, in short, why low-code is taking off?
Absolutely. That's a big reason why, right? I mean, these are unlocking the hidden potential of these business domain experts, if you will, who know what they want, and lowering the barrier. So they are able to take their skill set, existing skill set, and they're able to get a lot more done. It kind of democratizes this data and unlocks the data that's sitting in all these different systems, right? And obviously leading to faster execution. You're no longer having to wait and rely on IT to help you with many of these tasks don't have to require IT to do it, right? So it leads to faster execution, lower cost, right? And today's generation workers, they do expect this level of functionality built into your product. They're used to it in many other consumer applications also, if you will, right? So in other words, you're helping them help themselves. It's a self-service tool. It increases the overall efficiency.
So you touch on a good point. The fact that you get a younger generation that has grown up with these tools, because from a consumer standpoint, a lot of it does become self-service. Yeah. I mean, we do hear that time and time again. So it's interesting that it's making its way over to the enterprise side. Although based on what you were saying with pipes and wires, that was quite some time ago. So
yeah,
it seems like the trend was always there. It's just now it seems to have reached critical mass.
Absolutely. Because back in the day when I was working on wires or the equivalent of pipes for the enterprise, at the time, the data was just not freely available. So the data was locked in these systems, and there was no easy standard-based mechanism to retrieve data out. So a big part of why these tools are even have taken off in the last few years is because the data has now become available. So there are standards to do this. Through APIs, you may have heard that term being used. So API-based approach, every tool now comes with its own API for getting data in and out of the system, and they can all play well together. So these tools are now the glue that is able to connect these things together, right? So that's what's happened, yeah.
All right. So I want to go back, because something you said sounds great to me, but I think it may be a little bit more scary for the IT side. And you talked about users being able to control what the solution is doing. We can configure it, we can customize it on our own, and we have the flexibility to do it. From my perspective, that's great, but we talk to a lot of IT leaders who they want that control. So they're concerned about people going off. And I can imagine it's a nightmare. You've got thousands of employees, each doing something on their own. So is there a downside here? Is there a problem with low code, no code, just creating a mess of an IT infrastructure?
No, I think that's a great point, right? With any of these tools that kind of unlock on one side, it unlocks a lot of potential, bringing in a lot more people contributing to this. But without guardrails, this can go haywire. And that's a point that's very well taken. And the guardrails in the form of security, the right level of access to the data. Now, if the data is in a system, obviously, we need to respect the security model of that system, who has access to it and so on, the permissions model. All that needs to be respected. And that is part of it. And then there's also oversight around who are allowed to publish certain things and so on and so forth. So the guardrails are very, very important. There's no doubt, right? And but at the same time, there is a balance, and IT can have full control over that and who can do what, and still work with, bring in the creativity of people to contribute towards this.
Okay. That's good. And I think, especially on the enterprise side, if you don't have IT blessing it's not going to take off. But yeah. I mean, to your point, you've mentioned this a few times, it's becoming more and more prevalent. Yeah. So, is every solution going to be ultimately a low code, no code solution? Are we at a point to where, I'll just leave it at that. Is every enterprise solution going to be low code, no code moving forward?
I think you're starting to see that quite a bit, be it Salesforce, be it, all the Microsoft tools, or you name it, most of the enterprise solutions that have been created in the last few years they all have this, you know, no code solution as part of it, right? Now, in fact, there was a Gartner report in 2022, which said that around like 30% of available PLM applications will be built on top of such tools about composable technologies, flexible technologies that allow you to customize it in this fashion using no code, low code, right? So it is evolving very, very fast. We also see that in integration tools like MuleSoft and Jitterbit as an example, or Workato for that matter. So the whole integration space is built around a no code environment where you're able to move data back and between different systems and define how all that data is flowing through a no-code, low-code environment. So you see a lot of these tools in the market today.
Okay. So, and we've seen transitions on the technology side in the past. So if we are indeed at an inflection point where, I'm going to go a little bit broad and say the vast majority, maybe not all, but the vast majority of new enterprise solutions are going to be low-code, no-code. What happens to the legacy applications that weren't built as no-code, low-code? Like, how is that transition going to take place from users, to your point, who are expecting it, but who are maybe coming into a company that has a legacy solution that was never built with that in mind?
Yeah, it's a tough transition, right? I mean, these old legacy systems, they are very rigid. The data is kind of locked in within their applications, hard to get data out of the system. So you kind of locked in. And it's all also not just that, you're also version locked, right? So they may have had some level of customization, but those customizations may have been built using a full code approach, meaning code was written to customize them, right? Now that code has been written by a few developers or a company, a consulting company that was brought in to do that. They have moved on. It's 3-4 years later, and you are now left with this. You don't know what exactly it does. You can't upgrade to the latest version of your vendor's software to adopt some of the new technologies that they've built. So now you're version locked. Because you don't understand how this is going to break your existing workflow and processes. So that's what we see from customers who are tied to these old legacy systems. And but because of which now you are unable to move fast. You're unable to respond to fast changes that's happening in your business. So this is going to start having impact on how and what you can do at the level of business, right? So slowly it's going to impact your top and bottom lines.
Okay. So the version lock, that's another thing that we see a lot of. You know, if you are using a mix of legacy and new, or I shouldn't say legacy, but traditional and low code, I mean, how do you go about thinking when you need to make the transition? To your point, if you're 2 or 3 years behind on your software upgrades because of the rev lock, how, on the other hand, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of mentality, right? You get a little bit of inertia that what I have in place is working just fine. On the other hand, you see the nice new shiny tools that, to your point, are going to make your workforce more productive. So what questions should you be asking as to when it's right to make the transition here?
Great question. I think I'll use the example of automobiles today, right? It's gone through, it is in the process of going through an inflection point right now as we speak. Now, you have an old car that's working, that's taking you from place A to place B. It was built 17, 20 years ago. I do have one such a car. It does take me from A to B and works reasonably well. There's no particular reason for me to change, as an example. However, what's happened with technology is that the cars that are coming out today are a lot more, they have a lot more safety features, right? You know, be it lane change assist or collision detection, what have you. So it's a lot more safer. Or even when you back up from your driveway, you know, you have the cameras. And these were not there back 20 years ago. Now, the question to ask is, okay, what am I trying to protect here? I mean, you want the passengers to be protected if that's your most important resource. And that's what you're going to So if that's important, you want to shift and adopt these latest technologies that's going to help you do this better, right? In the same way, if your business needs are changing constantly, you want to be able to adapt to it and be able to use these latest technologies to help you deliver to your business needs, right? So I would say those are some things for you to consider. Being version locked with an old version, it might be business as usual, but then your competitors are moving forward with a lot more innovative, faster solutions, and you're going to be left behind. And over time, I think we also saw this in a recent, back in December, Southwest Airlines had a huge outage. And I remember reading a long form article on New York Times about this saying, hey, Southwest had been pushing this. They've been version locked in some ways to very old systems. They know they have to move forward, but they just couldn't. I think we spoke about some of the reasons today, but eventually leading to a very chaotic situation that affected so many people, and not to mention their own brand and their equity and their reputation, right? So there's a lot at stake here.
Yeah, I was impacted by that meltdown. So I appreciate you bringing me down the memory lane here. But but okay, last question for you. So one of the things that we see as well quite a bit is we see companies that are spin-offs, or if they're acquired, they have to get off an existing IT stack. And a lot of times they're just building a best of breed stack from scratch. And sometimes, as we mentioned, most applications are going towards low code, but some of them are still the traditional code bases that do require custom development, and companies are making a decision between, do they stick with the familiar, which is going to get them up to speed quicker, probably in terms of training a workforce, because that is the same technology they were using at the company before the spinoff. Or do they embrace the new, where there's going to be maybe a little bit more of a learning curve, but then you're going to have a low code, no code solution. So, you know, similar question, but different than the previous one, like what questions should a company that's maybe going through this, what should they ask to determine which solution is going to be best for them?
Yeah, no, great question. Yeah. So you always start with the business need, right? See what you're trying to solve. What are you trying to solve? And at the same time, how important is flexibility for you, extensibility? Do you foresee that in the future? Do you need it today to adapt to the changing business needs? And as we spoke in the previous question, answer to the previous question, technology is changing rapidly, right? So your software vendors are introducing really latest innovations. How important is it to move ahead with it and be able to adopt it as you move forward? Is your IT backlogged? Is the IT cost pretty high? And do you want to go back in line behind, in terms of your IT backlog and wait for IT to take it on? Or you want to control your own destiny in terms of being able to move faster and get your solutions there out there, right? By adopting latest technology, as well as the power of your own workforce, that your creative workforce, that's you're unlocking them to help you serve the needs of your business better. So these are some of the questions that come to my mind. We should all be thinking along those terms. So you want to be stuck with something that you're just familiar with just because of how it's been done in the past, versus adopting things that are happening in the future and making us a lot more productive than we have ever been, right? So to me, that's the question that we these companies should be asking themselves.
Okay, all right. Well, that's the end of the questions, but as you, as you gave your own answer there, you did make me think of one last one. As you think about any solutions that you would personally buy, whether it's for your home or for work, would you ever buy anything that isn't low code? And you're a developer, so I know you can build your own custom code, but I'm just wondering, you even have somebody who could do it and could probably do it in your sleep, would you still go to a solution that isn't a low code or no code solution?
No, I don't think so, right? You want that flexibility everyone's need is different. And I would love for the flexibility to be there for me to adopt this solution to my to our needs, right? So yeah, the answer to that is no. I'm definitely looking, I will definitely be looking for the ability to make these kind of changes very easily. And yeah, that would be the answer to the last one.
All right. Well, thanks, Kishore. Again, I know you know this topic better than anybody else here, so I appreciate you spending some time to share your knowledge with us. Thank you.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure, Dario. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Platform Rules, Digital Transformation for Product Companies. You can listen to this show and more at propelsoftware.com/podcasts. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share with a colleague, leave a review, or email us at podcast@propelsoftware.com with any feedback or questions. Until next time, Platform Rules.